Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art. And show the world your heart. Express yourself through art.
And welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on WVLP 103.1 FM and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. This is our weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Our theme music you heard is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Underwriters for Art on the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum, regional art patron Mary Levan, and our landlord, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. If you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, please give Walt a call, 219-462-5821. I'd like to thank them for their generous support. Thanks to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, Vice President, Radio Operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Art in the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project grant through South Shore Arts and is part of the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, or exhibit, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Our program, along with all of our programs, are streaming live at wvlp.org. Art on the Air is rebroadcast on Monday at 5 p.m. Our shows are carried by Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM, every Sunday at 7 p.m., and you can hear them at lakeshorepublicradio.org. Our entire show archive can be heard at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That's breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. And make sure to like us on our Facebook page, Art on the Air, WVLP. Art on the Air is always looking for financial support. We'd like to thank our current supporters. If you're looking to support Art on the Air and, of course, the WVLP station, we'd be happy to become part of the WVLP family anytime. Esther and I especially would invite you to become an underwriter of this program in particular. We have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA. You can find out support information there or at wvlp.org/support. So don't just be a WVLP and Art on the Air listener. Become a supporter or underwriter in whatever amount you're able to do so we continue to bring you great content and this great local programming. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air and the whole WVLP family. Join the WVLP family today. And next on our spotlight for Art in the Air, we have Amy Navratilakis, Executive Director for the Art Barn School of Art in Valparaiso. Welcome to the show, Amy.
Thanks for having me.
Aloha.
Well, we know you're kind of now coming out of COVID-19 things, but tell us what you got going on. I know you're now reopening exhibits and things like that. So tell us what's going on there.
Well, we're running summer camps, and we're running some virtual classes for our adults that are a little bit more nervous about coming in, and we have some classes kind of scheduled a little bit farther out for them, and we have exhibitions going on. So we're kind of running as usual, but just at kind of a condensed version of that, I guess you could say.
And you're doing that with what kind of social distancing and a mask and things like that?
Yeah, so we have a mask requirement if you enter our building. So all of our students and staff and stuff, we're all wearing masks to keep everybody safe. And we have got screening procedures and everything in place. So that seems to be working pretty well. And, you know, of course, with our summer camps, when you've got kids, you know, we're running them around outside a little bit too, so they get a little break from wearing the masks and they go outside.
So what about, has anybody approached you for rentals? Are you able to do small controlled rentals?
Yeah, actually we do have, a wedding shower that's coming up, and they were actually in this week kind of working on their social distance planning and, you know, trying to keep people separate, but also trying to still keep it a special event. So, but there is not a whole lot of that going on. I mean, most of the special events that we had, you know, that went from March until now kind of either got rescheduled or pushed. So, but yeah, there are some people that are, you know, still wanting to continue to do something, but it's just, it's really hard to celebrate those big special life events in big groups, you know?
The current exhibit you have is Laurel Iser. Tell us a little bit about that. That's running through August 10th, I believe.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's really a wonderful exhibition. Laurel is such a versatile artist, and this is kind of her, you know, newest project that we're exhibiting, and it's quilts of endangered animals. So she's taken quilts that have been, she's kind of repurposed quilts that are, that she's kind of giving them a new life, basically. So quilts that have kind of already been created, and she has embroidered on top of those, and all of the species that she's incorporated into that are endangered. So, and it's beautiful work, colorful. And yeah, it's really worth seeing.
What's after that exhibit?
After that exhibit, we're going to be having the children's art exhibition, which is sort of a highlight of the work that our children create in the classes they take at Art Barn. So our children's art exhibition is coming up, and then we are going to be featuring the winners from our online art in quarantine exhibition. So we're actually currently still taking submissions for that until July 24th. So we're really hoping that anybody that they've been creative and making things during this period of time, we're hoping that they would consider submitting their work for the exhibition. The submissions do help to support the Art Barn, and you'll be in the online exhibit, and then any of the award winners will be featured in our lobby. So.
Including photography.
Something new for us.
Including photography.
Including photography. Exactly. Exactly. So
we petitioned enough for that, huh?
Yeah, I know.
So can you describe what going to an opening right now is like? I mean, are you limiting the amount of people, or how many come in at a time?
Well, we're not really setting a limit so much. Like, we're not making people, at this point, we're not having people like sign in for a slot. I know some places are doing that. We actually had Laurel's opening reception this past weekend, and basically we kind of did the reception, the meet and greet the artist outside, which worked because it's warm outside, you know. So we had sort of everything sort of set up outside so people could social distance. We had chairs and all the drinks and refreshments outside. And then when people wanted to go inside and take a look at the work, they did so in small groups. So that seemed to work out really well. We had great weather, and so that worked out really well. But we're going to kind of play by ear as it goes.
Well, real quick, right before now, we get away from you, tell us about where the Art Barn's at, your website, and your Facebook page.
So we're in Porter County at 695. North 695 400 East, and in Valparaiso, and you can find us at artbarnschool.org.
Thank you, Amy, for being on our Spotlight for Art in the Air from Art Barn School of Art.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And we'd like to welcome to Art on the Air Jade McAloon from Pieces of Jade Elemental Jewelry. And what that is that's the brainchild of Duneland artist Jade McAloon, who's an avid nature lover. Jade spends her time hiking, prowling the woods, surrounding the home in the Indiana Dunes area. Jade, welcome to Art on the Air.
Aloha, Jade. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you. We know you had to during the COVID-19 specials that we ran. So tell us a little bit about your background, how you got from where you were to where you are now.
I'm not sure how far back you want me to go, but I feel like, as with everyone, your life experiences kind of feed into what you are and who you are now. So I would say that my most formative memories and years were spent in the Ozarks of Missouri. We lived on a 600-acre farm with goats and horses and cows and chickens and turkeys. And I used to spend my days getting on my horse when the sun came up and rolling back in when the sun went down.
So you like to horse around a little bit.
Yeah, no BS there. I definitely feel like that fed into my love of nature. Of course, I always have, but had that kind of freedom, which I don't think our kids these days get for many reasons. Just to have that kind of freedom and to just sit outside and observe for hours and hours and watch the way creatures work and how nature kind of does her thing definitely influenced my work today.
Let's fill in the gap a little bit more. Tell us about how that experience got you through life to where you are now, like where you went to school, other types of events in your life.
So my mom was an artist, a fine artist. She started out with charcoal drawings and went through, gosh, pretty much every kind of art you could do, from making stained glass pieces. She did a lot of pastel work and watercolor. And at the very end of her life, she made jewelry. She didn't know it was the end of her life at the time, but she would drag me around to all the different art shows and experiences. I sat as a model for her drawing classes, and I wish I could have gone with her, but my mom went to England and Italy twice and Russia to study her art. So my mom was my major influence. I wish I had paid more attention, but of course, when you're a teenager, nothing that your mother says sticks or means anything to you. It's just, I just do the opposite. But
you're really lucky because you're surrounded by her artwork, and she was extremely talented. So to have that work must be inspiring, because you can learn so much from just looking at it as well.
It's true. Thank you. Yeah. She, actually my parents moved to Long Beach at the end there. They moved from Chicago to Long Beach. So she and I used to go to all the antique stores around here, and you know, just her little nuggets of wisdom. And she actually worked with Judy at the Chesterton Art Center, so they knew her when I first moved here. It was a little disconcerting and yet exciting to have people recognize the name and know that that was my mom. But I went to school at University of Tulsa and then Texas A&M I wanted to be a writer, and so I became a copywriter. I have a degree in English and marketing, and so I spent a lot of years writing copy for catalogs like Crate and Barrel and Walgreens, and I found it to be very thankless. I would bust myself hard to get a deadline met, and then who cares? It's a catalog people throw in the garbage, and it just really over time grated on me to be making so much money for other people. And I have four sons, so I was freelancing and tearing my hair out, running around all over the place while these guys were little. And I remember having a conversation with my mom one day. I said, I am so unhappy. I don't like what I do. I started out working in book publishing and I loved it, but money and job dictated that I start working for retail, and I just really hated writing and copywriting for that. So she said, what would you want to do? And I really was torn between teaching and nursing. I remember that conversation with my mom. Do I want to be a teacher? Do I want to be a nurse? And she said, well, being a teacher means you'll have the same schedule as your kids. And that appealed to me. So I went back to school and I got my master's degree in teaching. And then I spent almost 20 years being a teacher in mostly middle school. I really liked the middle school age kids. And I ended up buying my own science franchise called Mad Science. And I was a mad scientist named Stargazer Sue for years. I would do stage shows and after school programs and summer camps, teaching kids science. Then we moved here to Indiana from Illinois back in 2010, and I got a job at the Challenger Learning Center, and then I became a space technician. We were called flight directors, and we would take kids on simulated space missions. So I really loved that job too. But while I was at Challenger Center, I picked up a stone on the beach one day, and I wanted to get it made into a piece. And on a teacher's salary, I found it to be a little bit intimidating how much people were quoting me to have the stone made into a necklace. So I thought, how hard can it be? And I started watching YouTube videos. I took a few classes and I started making things for myself. And enough people saw my work that they thought it was pretty cool, and they asked me to make things for them. About 2 years into it, I decided to try my luck at the Chesterton European Market. So I got a booth and I hung out my shingle and put out my wares. I've been doing it ever since. So I've been at the market for 8 years now.
We can call you Jade the Science Gal, but what an interesting journey you've had in doing that. In fact, I just saw you last week at the European Market and everything. So now that you started on this journey of making jewelry, tell us a little bit about that. You know, you found your first piece and kind of learned it, but now how does pieces of jade come into being using the elements that you pull together?
Well, this is a great story because Jade started with wire wrapping, and now where she ended up, I can't wait for her to tell that story.
Yeah, well, wire wrapping is fun because you get to make a frame for the stone, and for me, the stone is always the star. I cannot improve, nor would I dare to try, on what Mother Nature makes. So my job is always to, in my mind, make a frame to showcase the piece. And that served me well for many years, but my arthritis in my hands had a different idea. It became really, really painful. I had surgery to try to fix it, and it kept getting worse, and I wasn't able to create in the volume that I needed to. And I knew about this thing called electroforming, but I didn't know what it was called. I saw crystals that had copper tops, and I loved the rough kind of organic look to them, but I couldn't for the life of me. Every time I searched like copper top or copper crystal, I wasn't getting the results that showed me what it was called. I went to a show in Crown Point one day, and I saw a girl that had a booth full of electroform things. And I said, I got to ask you, what do you call this process, what you're doing to these stones? And she said, oh, it's electroforming. Once I had the terminology, then I could figure out how to do it. And instead of buying the kits that you could buy, we decided, since I have the science background, my boyfriend and now husband at the time, Mike, said, let's just make our own solution. Let's just try it. What could go wrong? So we started, we had a little mad science laboratory in our living room, and I put chemicals together, and we tried many different formulas to get the balance right. And we just started electroplating or electroforming different items. And I fell in love with the technique and the surprise of it, because it is kind of an unpredictable medium. So that was the new path for me.
So what were the first things that you started electroforming?
I was smart. When I was wire wrapping, I was grabbing expensive wire, pure silver, and wasting a lot of it. With this, I picked up junk stones or broken things that I had and tried those first. So the safest thing you can electroform are crystals, right? Different rocks. And we certainly have plenty of them here at the beach. So I learned which kinds of rocks get eaten by the acid in the process and which things you can cover with latex and preserve. And honestly, this is a very much trial and error kind of a medium.
So what is the most fragile thing that you electroform? Because right now I'm wearing two pieces that you've done, and one is a cicada. And I know bugs are hard to do, I'm sure, feathers, but what has been the most fragile?
I would say hemp leaves, because when you're working with what I call organics, and many people call it that, the leaves, if they're not dried properly, become very brittle. And when you're painting them to get them ready for the bath, they just break apart. And insects, I'm learning how to rehydrate them, which is kind of an icky process, but you can take a stiff carcass and reanimate it a little bit. So I'm able to rehydrate insects and kind of stretch them and pin them and position them. I've kind of gotten over the fragility of them. But I think the fern leaves are also something that's incredibly, incredibly difficult because they're so fragile. But once they're plated, they're fine. And I have to explain that to people because they're worried about my pieces being too fragile to wear. So I assure them that I am very hard on my things. So I always road test them, if you will, before I put them out for sale to make sure that they're going to hold up to daily wear, because I want people to actually wear my jewelry. That's kind of the point.
They're very magical pieces as well. And so what is your process for picking your stones and what works with what? Because you'll take sometimes those feathers and leaves and add a gemstone to them as well.
Yeah. So sometimes they tell me, in fact, more often than not, sometimes it's a happy accident where something will spill and it happens to spill next to each other. And I'll go, wait a minute. But I feel like that's the fairies kind of driving me towards something that they saw and wanted to show me. Sometimes I dream up designs. I'm definitely inspired by other people, but I'm very careful not to copy. There's a lot of copying in the art world, and there's a lot of argument towards the fact that there's no such thing as an original idea, but I kind of rail against that because I do think there's originality, and I think that you can be inspired by somebody and not copy them directly. So that's kind of an ongoing debate, if you will.
It is.
I like one of the things you say is you have unboring jewelry that's unique. So all your pieces are actually quite unique. There's nothing that's they're like one of a kind, aren't they?
They are, and it's funny because in Etsy, and that's what I've definitely had to migrate towards thanks to having all our shows canceled, selling online, many people who are gurus on Etsy say, you'll never make any money making one of a kinds. The whole premise of Etsy is to be able to crank things out in large volumes. But I'm finding a way to still be who I am and not kind of acquiesce to that mindset, because I'm not interested in making multiples of the same thing. I'm a Sagittarius, so I get bored easily anyway, but I don't want somebody to walk around and then see somebody else with the same exact piece. That just doesn't feel right to me.
If you're doing two pieces, like two wolves, they're going to be totally different, because like the piece that I'm like really attracted to the pieces that have granulation on them that you're doing, but I know that's unpredictable. So every piece would be different because of your process.
Yeah. The electroforming process, you can't repeat, even if you're trying to get texture, as we call it. Sometimes you get more voltage lines, and other times you get like these nice dendrites that form. And it's all about current and voltage and how much conductivity there is. And it could be a power surge in your house. It could be how much graphite is in the paint solution I made. You just never know. And that's kind of one of the fun things I love about what I do, is that wild factor.
Tell us about the process a little bit, like when you find a gemstone and then go from that to making something.
Yeah, so the first thing that I do is decide which way is up, where the bale or the ring at the top of the piece goes. And then I connect the bale, usually using epoxy and super glue to kind of set it in place. Then the piece gets painted with a graphite paint that I make myself, so that anywhere that I paint is going to be plated. And if I don't want it to plate, I can mask it out with liquid latex. And then the piece gets suspended by pure copper into an acid bath that has some different chemicals, distilled water, copper sulfate, and electric. It's connected with alligator clips and electric current in this piece called a rectifier. And then I adjust the voltage and amps and see how long it takes to plate the piece. The copper will grow everywhere that I paint.
One of my happiest times is visiting the studio and being part of the mad scientist energy. I just loved watching everything in process, and you have this beautiful table filled with stones, and it's so hard not to be inspired by where you are and what you're doing. So you wake up in the morning and you go into your studio, and what next?
Well, number one, I have to feed the rats. I have five wonderful little pet rats that are my studio mates, and they get their breakfast, or they start throwing their things around to get my attention. So once they're dealt with, I may have something that I'm halfway through that I need to continue, or sometimes I have dreamt something that needs to come out. It just depends. I mean, I think every artist has different things. I wish I had more of a routine, and I've tried with being home for so long now to have more of a routine, and it just, I don't know. It's just not my personality.
How long does something stay in the bath to be electroformed generally?
It depends on what it is. So something that has a lot of surface area can take up to 36 hours, like a larger feather. Honeycombs have to kind of, sometimes they have to come out and they have to repaint spots that didn't plate, then they go back in again. That jawbone piece that I showed you, actually did a piece of it broke off while I was polishing it. So I had to re-epoxy it, redo it, and only plate that part of it. So now I've created more ridge lines that I have to Dremel out. So it can be a very involved thing.
So each piece requires just hours and hours and hours. I mean, because that's just one part. And then you, like you say, you have to clean it up. And then do you put an epoxy on it to stabilize where it is in its oxidation process? Or
once it comes out of the bath, it should be. And if plating has gone well, it'll be bright, shiny copper. And I almost never like to leave it that way. That's just not my aesthetic. So the piece will then go into a liver of sulfur bath where it turns really dark. It smells god-awful. And then it gets polished. I'll usually do a wet polish with steel wool and Dawn dish soap, believe it or not, to polish and kind of highlight. Sometimes I use the Dremel. Then it gets washed again, and then it gets clear-coated with something called Protective Clear that will help slow down, but it never stops the oxidation. It just slows it down. Some people really get offended by the green that their skin turns with copper, even though it's completely harmless. So I do recommend for people like that, if you don't like the green, you can always throw on a coat of clear nail polish too, and that will stop it and not hurt the stone. But yeah, so it's a many, many hour process.
What's your favorite gemstones and pieces that you find in nature to work with?
It's always hard for a Sagittarius to answer what your favorite anything is because we change. But lately, I've been really, really, really loving seashells. I cannot get enough shells. In fact, pretty much this whole year, I'm not sure why. Seashells are my thing. And that's, of course, also found in nature. I tend to love moonstone and labradorite, of course. And I just found a new crystal I'd never heard of. And, of course, I'm going to forget the name. It's like stilobite. It's this white crystal that's richer and more sparkly than quartz. And I'll make sure that I put a piece of that up for people to see. But it is absolutely beautiful and super fragile. So I'm not even sure I can plate it, but I do love having it.
Okay, and so the unboring jewelry, and you said you have an unbridled experience as a Sagittarius, but what is your week? You say your work speaks to the soul, so maybe expound on that for us.
That's an easy question to answer when I think about who my customers are. I absolutely adore my customers. They find me. We find each other. I love these people that come to my booth. They're drawn in by, I have a sign in my booth that says that all my work has been inspected by a feline process, the CAT scan, which is true because Sasha likes to climb all over everything. I didn't say a rat scan because I didn't think people would be as into that. But people are drawn to my work because they like the aesthetic and they like the crystals. And we have great conversations about crystals and we love to look at their different kinds of tattoos as they come in because I have them as well. And I don't know, many of my customers have become my friends over the years, which is delightful.
So now during the virus, I imagine going to find stones is going to be more difficult. So so have you had great luck acquiring stones without going and picking it out? Because sometimes the pleasure of it is going and finding energetically the right strand to pick, you know, and now that's got to change a little bit.
That's true. And this is where you have to really rely on your relationship that you have with your suppliers. And fortunately, over the years, I have met some people that I trust very much with where they get them and recommendations that they make for me because they know me. I think if I were just starting out, this would be really, really hard because you're right. Stones and jewelry both are best selected in person. So I'm grateful for the platform of Zoom and Instagram where you can really showcase your things, but it's not the same as being in person.
It's so true. And I'm glad for those suppliers as well that I've been dealing with for decades and decades. There is a trust that is built up.
Where have you exhibited at? You talked about the European market, but where else have you been showing your work?
Before we were kind of locked down, I was able to go as far as Asheville, North Carolina. We've been to the Renaissance fairs in Michigan and Wisconsin and Indiana. music festivals, like Hippie Fest, were super fun for us. We've done a few of the smaller markets, but I'd say the Renaissance Fairs were my absolute favorite places to showcase my work. Those are my people, and I really miss it.
Did you dress up?
Of course I did.
Yeah, she's in costume.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hey, tell us how people can find you online. Your Facebook, I think you have an Etsy site and other things. So how can they find about Pieces of Jade?
So Instagram, if you have it, is a great platform. And that's if you do the @ and Pieces of Jade, just make sure you're putting a Y in Jade, M-J-A-Y-D-E. That also puts me on Facebook. And then I do have a website, piecesofjade.com. And then also my Etsy shop is where you actually do the purchasing. If you buy through my website, it actually takes you to Etsy. So,
okay. Any final thoughts you want to give us? We have about a minute or so left, Jade, about COVID-19 and how that's influenced you or negatively or positively.
It's easy to get mired down in the negativity of everything that's going on right now. And I think being labeled non-essential was hard to kind of overcome, but I disagree that artists are non-essential. I think we're more essential than ever, because creating something beautiful to make somebody feel good about themselves or to beautify their space that they're now trapped in is very important. And I do think that COVID has kind of brought that out in people, that they're appreciating art more than ever because they realize that it makes you feel good, and that's important.
You know, and with your jewelry, not only can you wear it, but I have it up on the wall, too, to see it. They're just they're so evocative, and I love giving your jewelry as gifts. I really love what you do, Jade.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me.
Well, Jade, give us the website and your Etsy site just one more time for our audience.
Sure. So find me at Pieces of Jade, J-A-Y-D-E, because everything I make is a piece of me. And you'll find Pieces of Jade on Etsy as well.
I hope you continue to do those small videos. That would be wonderful.
I have some ideas, so I'm working on it. But we're actually leaving for camping next week, or actually tomorrow. Oh, my God. I have to go pack. But more videos to come.
Good.
Well, we appreciate you being on Art in the Air. That was Jade McAloon, Pieces of Jade, Elemental Jewelry. And she gave you your websites. We appreciate you being on the show and sharing all of your beautiful art.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, you guys.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. And welcome to Art in the Air. In this segment, we have Anne-Marie Marty of Mighty Mirth. It's a series of great cartoons that reflect the messages of empowerment, upliftment, and healing, inspired by her body of work, her career as a massage therapist, and energy healer. In her body work sessions, Anne-Marie always sought to support the clients in every way of the truth they're getting along with. Anne-Marie, welcome to Art on the Air.
Good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Aloha, Anne-Marie. It's so good to see you.
Anne-Marie, we want to kind of get your background. I know you're new to the show as far as the long interview, but we appreciate that you're on the COVID-19 specials we did. What we first want to do is talk a little bit about your background, how I kind of call it your story journey, how you got from where you were to where you are now, and both artistically and personally.
Okay, that's a big story for me. So I've been doing body work, energy body work, shiatsu therapy for about 30 years. And in the process of doing that, I started making these cartoons. The Mighty Mirth character appeared around 2003 during difficult time in our country. We're looking at going to war and just saw and experiencing a lot of loss and death in our own country. And it was just a difficult time emotionally for me. And this character came into my life, just sort of appeared out of nowhere. And I began to make cartoons and that expressed messages of hope and healing and upliftment and love that I had found resonated with people that I work with in my body work practice. So that's how Mighty Mirth came to be.
Tell us a little bit about your background, like where you grew up, where schools you may have gone to and things like that in your journey.
So I grew up mostly in Benton Harbor, Michigan, and we moved to Evanston. I went to high school there and then college down in Champaign, Illinois. And I was interested in environmental issues, you know, back in the 70s before there were programs where you could study that. And so I worked in that arena for a while and in Washington, D.C. And then I moved back to Chicago, and I had always been interested in learning shiatsu, actually. I had done martial arts, Shotokan karate, for many years, and that had piqued my interest in the Asian healing arts. And so then I found my way to shiatsu eventually, and then the rest I've already told you. So that's kind of my history.
Well, Anne-Marie, we would love to hear more about this cartoon, Mighty Mirth. Could you tell us about Mighty Mirth and all Mighty Mirth's different sides?
Yes. So Mighty Mirth is a line drawing. It's kind of a meditating figure with a happy face, closed eyes, very peaceful, very, very zen, very happy. Mirth is, you know, happiness and joy and laughter and merriment. And he also has, or she, could be he or she or anything, doesn't really need to have a gender, has a red cape. So that's where the Mighty Mirth part came in. So it's like the superhero of happiness and joy. And the cartoons play on creating, for instance, one of my favorite cartoons and that gets a lot of smiles is asking, is it an oops or an oopsitunity? So the whole outlook is to look for what's possible in life and what's going on.
Did the cartoon and the name come at about the same time, or did you draw this cartoon and then the name followed later?
Well, that's a great question. So first I drew the cartoon and minus the cape, and I was calling the cartoon Mr. or Ms. Plurk, because my company name was originally Plurk Factory, which Plurk is play plus work. So I would call the character Mr. or Ms. Plurk. Then a conversation with a friend, kind of a random conversation, and she said, oh, that's Mighty Mirth. And I said, oh, that is Mighty Mirth. And that's when I added the red cape. And then I kind of transitioned to the Mighty Mirth name. Mr. Ms. Plurk still comes in there at some times, kind of like as a, you know, Clark Kent sort of thing. You know, you're Clark Kent in normal life. You know, you might be Mr. and Ms. Plurk in normal life, and then you put on that red cape and watch out. Your life is going to get better.
Do you feel like telling us one of the stories?
I would love to. So during the pandemic, I finally found the voice for telling Mighty Mirth stories. I was told for years that I should write children's stories, and I always thought that had to be someone else because I didn't know how to do it. And the voice finally came. So I have three stories now and many more ideas to come. The first one that I want to share with you is called Introducing Ooh 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 Amazing You, which is one of the greeting cards I have. It says Ooh 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 Amazing You. So you open to the second page and it says, yes, you are ooh, ooh, ooh. And then we have a little Mighty Mirth quote. Mighty Mirth says, your ooh, 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 amazing you is valued, priceless treasure in Mirth world. It is known as your Mirth treasure that only you can bring forth. Because that's something I learned in my bodywork career, is that everyone has really unique and special gifts to give in life. And I felt that my job was helping people connect with that. So then the next page says, finding your valued, priceless mirth treasure, your ooh, 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 amazing you, is an adventure of listening to yes sparks. Those yes sparks, you know, coming from your heart, are lanterns lighting the way to do something we love that can serve the greatest good in this time. So finding your mirth treasure happens by listening to your heart and your yes parts. And then I have some practice questions. And these are really fun to go through, you know, by yourself or with a friend. Number one, what do I like or love or feel neutral about or hate doing? I think it's important to know, you know, where you land on those questions. What comes easy for me that is not easy for others? That's a major clue, because sometimes we think, oh, that's nothing. You know, that thing that I do.
I can do that.
That's so easy. Anyone could do it, but not anyone can do it. Mm-hmm. And then, so I really love to help people connect with that. Number three, what do I like to create? Like, where do you see something that you want to add, you know, make things better? And number four, where do I see problems to solve and how to solve them? And I think that that's something, you know, sometimes we see, oh, that should be done this way, or, you know, I could, you know, this or that, or, you know, whatever that is. Like, those are our gifts when we see those things. And sometimes we hold back and say, oh, that's not important. Or
somebody else has thought of it already.
Yeah. And Mighty Mer's message is do it. Do it. Follow that yes spark in your heart. And then the last page says, you know, guess what happens as you think about these questions? You remember who you are. Ooh, 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 amazing you. Love, Mighty Mer.
That's great. What's your inspiration for that, Anne-Marie? What inspired you to start drawing and creating characters?
Well, I've always loved cartoons. When I was a kid, my parents used to get the New Yorker magazine, and the first thing, I would just grab it and go through and look at all the cartoons. And my favorite cartoonist was Steinberg. And Steinberg is able to communicate really powerful, deep messages with a simple line drawing. And I love those, and I still love those. I have one that I tore out of a magazine, you know, when I was probably in high school. It's pretty yellow now. And I think that's what attracted me. And it wasn't a plan in my head. I just started doing it. And then I looked back and I said, oh, this comes from my love of, you know, these cartoons that I grew up with. And I am finding a way in my own way to express what I consider to be deep concepts with cartoons that are very light and playful and whimsical.
So whimsy is a major portion of your work then?
Yes, because mirth is just happiness. Expresses itself in whimsy, yeah, and, yeah. And happiness, you know, and that playfulness. And really, you know, people ask me all the time, well, who's your audience? And it's really a question I've kind of struggled with, because I'm like, well, everyone, but that's too big. So just recently I said, well, I can narrow it down a little bit. It's the inner child in everyone. So I kind of write the stories to the, like as if I'm telling a story to a child, but it's really to the inner child in all of us. Because I read these to my friends and they say, oh, I really need that. That's a message that resonates for me.
So what is it that you would like to accomplish with Mighty Mirth?
I would like to spread more mirth. I would like to give people tools, because really they're whimsical and playful, but they're really good tools for living. And what I would like is that everyone, that these cartoons help people start to look at what their gifts are. And especially, you know, we're moving through difficult times, and, you know, it's kind of all hands on deck. You know, we're all here to give something of value, you know, to the greater good. And you know, a lot of times we don't have the self-confidence, you know, speaking for myself, you know, self-confidence to trust what that is, what our impetus is to do and give and create and think about or explore or learn about and share. And I just feel that everyone, you know, the world is a better place when we are all doing that.
And you know what? When you showed me the smaller format of the book, I just want to have to carry like half a dozen in my purse to hand out to people I see who are having a hard time that day. I know that Somebody did that for me once. I was having a difficult day and they handed me, I can't even remember what it was, but it was so sweet. And it just, and so that's like how I, that little book will be so wonderful just to send to people or just to have to spontaneously give. And, but then something you were just talking about with the questions, and we briefly talked about it the other day, but workshops, I think workshops are such a good direction with those questions. I mean, you would never run out of answers for those questions.
Yes. And that's something that I'm exploring with some of my friends who are interested, who are my Mighty Mirth fans, my cohort,
fan club.
my Mirth Brigade. And that's another story I'm going to be writing about how to find your Mirth Brigade, how to choose the people to be in your life. These are very practical tools, you know, like who's really on your side? Who's really got your back? How do you know? That's your Mirth Brigade when you find them. And so I have a list of points about how to identify your Mirth Brigade and what they're not also, which is good to know, right? And so we're going to be doing some online experiences with my little stories. And I just see them as a way, I can see them, you know, reading to these to a child, and maybe some of the concepts need a little explanation, but that creates conversation between you, an adult and a child. So I think there's a lot of fun that can be had with this, and, you know, just in sharing and exploring ourselves with the people in our lives.
You're listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, and on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. You know, early on, I want to make sure that we get your, and we'll do this near the end of the your interview, is how can people find out about Mighty Mirth? Facebook, on website? What's the web addresses or those information?
So the web address is Mighty, like Mighty Mouse, MightyMirth, MIRTH.com, which is also the name on Facebook. And then on Instagram, it's Mighty_Mirth. And yeah, and that's how you find me. And I have the, the products, of course, are on the website. And I'm going to be doing some videos, telling the stories, and going through some of the pieces of the stories in a little bit more depth. So there's a lot to explore, and I really think there's an opportunity to do some things with groups on Zoom. We could go through some of
the... You have already a full line of products, too. You have Mirth flags, and you have T-shirts, and these books. And so it's on its way.
Yeah, there's T-shirts. I have the Mirth flag. It's like a prayer flag with some of the different cartoons, and then we also made that into an accordion. And there's little stand-up paper dolls that are Mighty Mirth. That just really, if mine isn't on my desk, like I sent it to somebody, it's like, whoa, something is missing here. Where's my Mighty Mirth? I need my Mighty Mirth, you know, and. They just brighten up a space.
Do you want to read another story?
Sure. So if all of this sounds too happy and cheerful for some people, because I have a crabby friend, and she said to me, she says, I don't know if I'm one of your Mirth people. So I said, we'll see about that. And I wrote a story called Mighty Mirth Welcomes Crabby and Grumpy People. And I really hope that people will go look at it, the website or Facebook or Instagram, because there'll be pictures to go along with this, which really adds a lot, of course. So this is a very short story. It says, calling all crabbies and grumpies. You know who you are. Mighty Mirth wants you. Why? You know wrong from right. 2, you are the first to complain. 3, you may take action. 4, the Mighty Mirth Brigade proposes laughter, but warning, laughter may involve laughing at us, and we also may be amused by your grumpiness and crabbiness. Sorry, not sorry. So here is to laughing at each other with love. Love, Mighty Mirth, Crab Mirth, Mad Mirth, and Sad Mirth. And there's a picture of each one of those on the story. And then there's a cartoon with just the Mr. and Ms. Clerk, no cape in this case because it's Krabby Mirth. And he has grrr coming off the head and grrr in the heart. And then a glass says half empty, always grrr. So
that's excellent. You've been doing this since about 2003. Is that correct?
Yes, a long time. And I always felt like, and this is an opportunity and a kind of lesson, I think, a life lesson that I think maybe other people could relate to. I was really making myself wrong. Like, why haven't I gotten this out in the world more? What's wrong with me? You know, that kind of internal dialogue. And when the pandemic hit, I thought, oh, this is why, because this is the perfect time for Mighty Mirth. I thought, honestly, that Mighty Mirth had picked the wrong person. And then I realized, no, Mighty Mirth, you know, to convey this whole idea. And I, no, Mighty Mirth picked the exact right person, because I do have a bit of a procrastinator in me. But sometimes it works out perfectly, I'm finding.
And just like with any birth, it has its right time. And this was Mighty Mirth's time to birth.
Yes, it's an oops-a-tunity.
It was an oops-a-tunity. I love the phrase. There's two of them that I really like that always make me smile. And it's where the journey of a thousand smiles begins with yours. I mean, that's such a beautiful thing to remember. And then I also just love the one that says, Mighty Mirth says, in dark times, your inner smile keeps your cape flying. It's like such a great image.
You know,
and it's true.
You know, Anne-Marie, you've done some traveling. So tell us a little bit about that. You've been not only just in Southwest Michigan and everything, but tell us a little about your travels and maybe how that contributed to Mighty Mirth.
Oh, that is a really interesting question. So I lived in Spain for about 7 months, and I also lived in West Africa in Dakar, Senegal, for almost 3 years. And I suppose what that gave me, especially living in Africa, such a different culture, is that because I was able to do shiatsu there and work with people, you know, do healing work with people, is I just realized we internally, we are all the same. And it was so clear. And people, I thought, well, maybe from a different culture, people will just have different ways of being. And then like, no, we're all the same. And that was really beautiful. So perhaps that did. And that is a question I will be thinking about some more, because I've never thought about that. Thank you for asking that.
Well, the other thing is, just tell us a little bit about your therapy background, too, because not only you have Mighty Mirth, but you actually can take care of people in that way.
Yeah, so that's...
Don't forget about the bars.
Oh, yeah. So, okay, so there's the shiatsu, which is working with the acupuncture meridians. It's getting the energy flowing, and the access consciousness bars is also a treatment to the head, points on your head that releases the energies, gets energies flowing. And what I just want to say about that for people who aren't familiar with energy work as a healing modality is that when the energy is flowing in your body, it's like when you're feeling good, you know, your energy is high. When you're in a good mood, your energy is usually high. Well, the body is the same way. When your energy is flowing, you feel good. And so there's a lot of healing to be gained in moving the energy. And that's what I love about doing shiatsu and doing the access consciousness bars. So they're kind of woo-woo modalities for some people, but they're very powerful if you check them out.
Do we have just a few minutes?
I think we have time for a short story.
Yeah, we were both of us thinking a quick short story.
Oh, okay. All right, so let's do Escaping the Land of Oops. So this was the first story I wrote right at the beginning of the pandemic, and I thought, boy, we are in an oops. What does Mighty Mirth have to say about that? And Mighty Mirth says, asking a simple question will help us escape the land of oops. Simply ask, is it an oops or an oops-a-tunity? So an oops-a-tunity would be an opportunity in an oops. A not-so-mirthy history. The land of oops-a-tunity became known as the land of oops when people got lazy and shortened the name of their land, which caused them to forget their history and who they are. People went from living in the land of oops-a-tunity where every oops was an opportunity, and fell into the land of oops. They were not happy. They were sometimes sad and sometimes mad. They found themselves in the land of oops, where oops were everywhere, and they forgot to look for the oops-tunities that are everywhere, always. Because they stopped looking, they stopped seeing the oops-tunities that are everywhere, and they were sad. Here's what happened next. Luckily, oops-tunities are abundant for those who see and believe and ask. You have to ask. Mighty Mirth and the Mirth Brigade came to the rescue to remind everyone how easy it is to see and find oops-tunities. It's that simple.
Do you have any quick final thoughts here in the last minute there about Mighty Mirth and everything else?
Well, I think oops-tunity is a really great tool, and I invite everyone to start using it in your life when something happens that you don't like. Is there an oops-tunity here?
And remind us again how they can find your work online.
My website, mightymirth.com. Same thing on Facebook and Instagram with an underscore between mighty and mirth.
So do you have a projection as to when the workshops might start?
Oh, that's a great question. I don't know, maybe in a month?
Perfect. Then we can do a 6-minute spotlight for you.
That'll be fun.
Well, we'd like to thank you. It's Anne-Marie Marty from Mighty Mirth, sharing with us the messages of empowerment, uplifting, healing, and by her whole body of work. Thank you for being on Art in the Air. Appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. And Mighty Mirth, thanks you too.
Thank you.
And we'd like to thank our guests today for being on Art in the Air, which is heard every Friday at 11 a.m., rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m., and Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Radio 89.1 FM. Your hosts are Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thanks again to Greg Kovach, WVLP's station manager, and Tom Maloney, vice president, radio operations for Lakeshore Public Radio. Underwriters for Art in the Air are Valparaiso University's Brower Museum and Walt Breininger of Paragon Investments. Also, Mary Levan is our art patron supporter. Art in the Air is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant and the National Endowment for the Arts. If you're interested in being a guest or send us information about your arts-related event, exhibit, please email us at artontheair@gmail.com. That's artontheair@gmail.com. See you right here next week, 103.1 FM and 89.1 FM, Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry are on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air, our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.